Let's talk about Riverside.fm, the leading podcast and video creation platform that's changing the game on how creators record content. Riverside FM allows you to record studio quality audio and up to 4K video on their platform. Now you can interview a guest 1,000 miles away and it'll sound like you're sitting in the same room. It's as easy to use as Zoom, but gives much higher quality audio and video recordings. Did we mention that they have a mobile app? This allows guests to connect directly from their phone and record content from anywhere. After your content is finished, you can easily grab clips to share them across your social media channels. So if you're looking for a hero platform for all your recording needs, from podcasts to webinars to other video content, you should be using Riverside FM. Sign up today so you can focus on your content and leave the quality to Riverside FM. Use promo code SHIPIT and receive a 30% discount on your first 3 months of your subscription. That's promo code SHIPIT to receive a 30% discount on the first 3 months of your subscription. Back to the show. Welcome to another episode of the City That Never Sleeps podcast. I'm Josh and I'm joined by my co-host Alex. We are here to talk about the New York Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets a little bit later after, you know, last episode about 2 weeks, I think. And we'll get into the reasoning of that and also the City That Never Sleeps podcast moving forward. But first of all, Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Excited to talk. Very exciting interview that we had with Kenny Albert. So it's really exciting to share that with you guys. And yeah, I'm just really excited to get into it.
I am too. And what do you want to do? You want to save the news for last and do the announcement first, or do the announcement first and do the news last? I don't know how you want to kind of...
Announcement first.
Announcement first. Okay. So... I guess I'll do the announcement, and then if Alex, you want to add anything, you let me know, because I don't know if I'll miss anything. So basically, next week we are going to be starting our school year. We are going to be juniors in high school, and that is, as I'm sure most of you listening know, the hardest year of high school for most people, right? We got the tests, APs, stuff like that. So obviously, we also have the other podcast, The Balance, as well, The Giant Take and Talking Blues. Please go subscribe to both of those. Those do take priority over this one, as this one is more of the fun, where that one is more of like business. Although they're all incorporated with shipitstudios.com, if you want to go check out the links for that. But basically, we're just going to take this one as it goes. We hope to deliver you a podcast every week, and even throughout the summer we've tried to do that, although it hasn't been the easiest of things, and also there hasn't been news. It was kind of been boring points. That's why we've kind of waited a few weeks to drop this episode. So it was a mix this summer of boring, not really much to talk about, and we had other priorities. Now at the school year, I will, you know, NBA season will be starting soon enough, training camp will be happening, preseason, so we're going to try and deliver you one episode a week. That is going to be our goal. And it might be two episodes, you know, one episode every 2 weeks, one episode every 3 weeks. It could even be one episode a month. But whenever we find the time to do an episode, that is when we will record. Like I said, our goal is once a week. That might not always happen every week. And that is just basically the announcement for the rest of this upcoming school year, which is going to be a while. It's going to be a number of months. So that is our goal to you, to try to get one out a week. It might not always happen every week, but we will try our best. Alex, you have anything to add on to that before we move on?
I actually have no additional comments. You explained it very well.
Okay, that's great then. So we're here now, right? We're recording this episode. This will be out, and we're hoping to get you one next week, and we'll go from there if there's the news for that as well. But okay, I'm sure you also want to hear the Kenny Albert interview. So let's run through this real quick. I guess I'll start with the Knicks news. We'll move to the Nets news. And then the big news with both teams. We'll talk about that. The Knicks are rumored to sign J.J. Redick. Now, this player, I believe, is a sharpshooter. He has played for multiple teams, but I think it's mainly the Mavericks I know he played with. I believe he played with the Pelicans as well. But Redick, I feel like, is just kind of one of those players that adds something to your team. He could, you know, he kind of reminds me of a Joe Harris, that, you know, but a little bit older, as he is 37 years old, 6'4", and is primarily a shooting guard. And he's played, now I have the stats here. He's played with Orlando for most of his time, from 2006 to 2012, played with Milwaukee in 2012, played with the Clippers from 2013 to 2016, the 76ers 2017-2018, and Pelicans 2019-2020. So he's bounced around in the most recent years. I'm sure that's because his performance on the court has kind of, you know, gone down, as actually his best season was in 2018 with the 76ers. He had average about 18 points per game with about 3 assists per game. Whereas this past season, he only played 13 games with the Dallas Mavericks, had about 11 minutes, had 4 points, 1 rebound, and 1 assist. So it wasn't too much work for him. Didn't get that much playtime either. But that's just a rumor. Maybe the Knicks sign him, maybe the Knicks don't. Although there was a signing that happened with the Nets. Alex, you want to talk about that?
Yes. So just about an hour ago when we're recording this, the news came out from various sources, Shams mainly, that Paul Millsap, the anchor man, apparently is his nickname, has joined the Brooklyn Nets. The 36-year-old is very old and is kind of on the decline. He's kind of like a poor man's Jeff Green. That's really mean. But yeah, last season.
What a nice way to describe your new player, Alex. Yep.
Miss Jeff Green. This past season, 2020-2021, he played in 56 games, had 9 points a game on average, 5 rebounds and 2 assists, 48% from the field and 34% from 3, and he's a 72% three throw shooter. You know, at peaks in his career, he was averaging 18, 19 points a game. Obviously now at 36, it's a bit more of a struggle. I think he's a nice piece to add, and I think he's a nice Jeff Green replacement.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's all for the intro. Oh, wait, no, I'm missing one more thing. And that is, according to the new NBA guidelines when it comes to COVID, is that the Knicks and Nets players must be vaccinated to play at their respective homes. That means Barclays Center, and that means Madison Square Garden. The new memo includes that in San Francisco and in New York, it seems that players and staff must be vaccinated. Now, they might make an exception for these teams since they play in New York, and this is more of a memo for the entirety of the NBA. Although I don't expect them to change the memo, but that's what it seems to be. It says sources, unvaccinated NBA players in markets with local requirements such as NYC, Knicks and Nets, and San Francisco Warriors will not be allowed to enter home arenas or facilities for game or teams activities conducted there unless there's medical approval or religious exemption. So there you go. So we'll have to see if how many players get, you know, kind of a way through to navigate this if they are unvaccinated for personal choice reasons. So we'll have to see about that. And I guess we'll go to the final thing here of this intro so you can get right to the interview, the trivia section. I will go first with my Brooklyn Nets question for Alex. Alex will follow with his New York Knicks question. So, Alex, here we go. We got 4 options. I don't think I've asked you this before, so that's a good thing. I'm not repeating anything. Which season did the, I'm not going to give that away. Which season did the Nets have the most all-star selections? All-star game selections. I can't read the question. Was it the 1974-1975 season, the 1984-85 season, the 1994-95 season, 2004-2005 season? There's a lot of 4s and 5s in there. Can you find out which decade it was? Which one was it, Alex?
2004-2005. Or, wait, what was the other? The 1990s? Which one was that? Was it like...
You just said it. You were very confident in your first answer.
I was, but wait, I thought it was like 1992, right? You said the first one?
Okay, you're not listening. So, no. It was 74-75, okay. 84-85, 94-95, 2004-2005. Which decade was it?
I stand with my guess, 2004-2005.
You are wrong. It was the 1974-1975 season where the Nets won a franchise record of 58 games and sent 4 players to the All-Star game, including Julius Erving, Larry Kennan, Billy Paltz, and Brian Taylor. Your next question is?
A little bit before my time, that's all I'm going to say. My next question is, what number did Nick Patrick Ewing wear during his Knicks career? Interesting one. I'm not, should I give you options? Or do you want options? Or yes, you need options. Okay.
I don't know how I don't like remember this, because I just like remember him, not like the number. Hopefully it'll pop in my mind when you read it. Hopefully. My
Seven,
dad will be very disappointed. This is not good.
7, 15.
Oh, Jesus.
31, 33.
Oh, 33.
Okay, there you go. Congrats.
Oh, thank God. Oh, my goodness. Okay. This is a very, that was a very, if you did not give me options, I would not have gotten it, but it popped into my mind right when you said it. So that's a good thing. Unusual number, right? Though, for like a,
yeah, a little bit. But then again, you're starting to see lots of unusual numbers, right? Like Luka is 77 now, right? In the modern NBA.
That's true.
I guess,
that's
so
true. And that's a hot jersey right now, too. Everyone loves that. It's popping
big
off.
Jersey.
So, yeah, we thank you so much for listening. We want to crack this right at the 10-minute mark, so I will send it to the interview. Enjoy it with Kenny Albert. We'll see you next time. Follow me on Twitter at joshola29, because this will be our outro. So we are back now with a very special guest, and you tell me if this is right. I believe you are the only sportscaster who currently calls all 4 play-by-play sports of the NFL, the NBA, the MLB, and the NHL in the United States and Canada. The NHL lead play-by-play voice for this upcoming NHL season on Turner Sports, the New York Knicks television play-by-play broadcaster, MLB on Fox play-by-play, NFL on Fox, Rangers Radio, NHL Radio, and also I believe you do the Washington football team play-by-play during the preseason as well, correct?
I just wrapped up the preseason, yes, with the
Washington. There we go. It is Mr. Kenny Albert. Kenny, how are you today?
I'm great, Josh. Hi, Alex. Great to be with you guys. Thanks for the very kind introduction.
We're really excited to talk to you, and I think Alex will get it started.
Yeah, so first, you know, we'll talk, I guess we'll talk about how you do all 4 major sports. So we have like a little quote here, or kind of like a blurb about what you did at one point. So on October 25th, 2009, you called the play-by-play of the Minnesota Vikings, Pittsburgh Steelers game for Fox, and then you hosted the New York Yankees locker room later that day. And the next day, you broadcasted a Rangers game on the radio and called the play-by-play for the Knicks season opener. So basically the question is, how do you do that?
Well, very fortunate, guys, to be involved in so many different sports. I've been with Madison Square Garden Network since 1995, working the Rangers games on the radio, and they slide me over and I work about 20 Knicks games on the TV side. Fox Sports since 1994, doing football every year and baseball during several of those years. And you mentioned the national hockey work on the television side with NBC for the last 10 or 12 years, and now moving forward with Turner Sports. So really fortunate to be involved in all 4 sports. I love the variety. My schedule sort of fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. And that week that you mentioned in 2009, that certainly stands out among the most memorable time frames of my career, working all 4 sports within the span of that one week.
And now kind of going back to your early childhood years, obviously you are within a family of sports broadcasters. Is that how you made your decision? You know, you kind of looked up to your father, and I know your uncle was a sportscaster as well. How does that kind of work growing up in a whole family of sports broadcasters?
Absolutely. I was around it all the time from a young age. When I was 5 years old, my parents bought me a tape recorder for my birthday, and I started announcing games into the tape recorder and set up my room like a TV or radio studio. And it's really all I ever wanted to do. And I learned a lot via osmosis, by listening and watching. And I always joke that family get-togethers were like the first all-sports radio station. I would sit around and listen to the stories that my father and my uncles would tell. So always loved the variety. Very fortunate in high school when I was in 10th grade, a local cable station, Cox Cable of Great Neck, came to my school to film a girls' basketball game, and I volunteered. They didn't have an announcer with them. They just had two cameras and a small production van. So I volunteered to announce the game. They clipped a microphone onto my shirt. And over the next 3 years, I had the opportunity to broadcast probably 75 to 100 other high school and Division III college sporting events. And I felt like I had a head start. Back then, unlike these days when there are sportscasting camps available to high school and college students and other opportunities out there at such a young age, back when I was growing up, these opportunities really did not exist until college. So I felt like I had a three-year head start calling the games for Cox Cable. I would bring my friends along as color analysts. And by the time I got to college, I had about 75 or 100 games worth of experience, which was invaluable.
I want to go back to one play that specifically is in my mind that you've called. And my question talks about Jose Bautista, ALDS. That shot was unbelievable. The home run, the 3-1 blast, obviously into the second row. And the camera is shaking as he is rounding first base in the stadium. Now, my question for you is, was that the loudest experience environment that you heard calling a game, or has there been something even louder calling a different event?
It was definitely right up there as far as the noise, the just the feel in the stadium that night when Bautista hit the home run against Texas. It was a late afternoon game, so it was probably about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. And I'll just never forget the atmosphere in Toronto that night. And that's one of the calls that I get asked about more often than any others. It was in the American League Division Series, and it was a crazy inning, the seventh inning. So many things happened aside from the Bautista home run. So definitely I would say in the top three or four as far as the noise level when Bautista did hit that home run.
So we're Giants fans. I'm not sure if you could tell. Josh has his little big blue stuff in the background. So you called two memorable touchdowns for the Giants. So I just wanted to ask you, which one was your favorite? So I have a couple here. If there's another one, then maybe, you know, let me know. But there was that Victor Cruz 99-yard touchdown against the Jets and the Odell to Saquon Barkley touchdown pass. Are there any others, or which one was your favorite?
Those are both very memorable. I figured you would bring up the 99-yard Eli to Victor Cruz. I thought you were going to mention the Daniel Jones game-winning touchdown and his first start against Tampa Bay. I forgot about the Odell Saquon touchdown. Mm-hmm. We also had Saquon's first NFL touchdown, I'm pretty sure, during his rookie season. So there have been a number of memorable moments. If I had to pick one, it would probably be the 99-yarder, because there haven't been that many that distance in NFL history. That obviously ties a record as far as a touchdown on a play from scrimmage. There have been kickoff and punt returns and interception returns and fumble returns longer from the end zone, but that's the longest you could have on a play from scrimmage. And that was a game that really catapulted the Giants into the postseason when they made their Super Bowl run. So that would probably be the one at the top of the list. Called so many Giant games during the Eli Manning era from his rookie season on, 2004. But I would say the Eli to Victor Cruz 99-yarder would be the one that stands out more than any others.
And I guess we're just talking about all our fandoms now, because I have to go to my Knicks. And I just want to ask you, obviously, as you just said, you're about to call 20 or so games this upcoming season. This is a good season to be calling those games. Obviously, they made some moves in the offseason, re-signed some good players. They brought in Kemba Walker. They brought in Evan Fournier, did some good draft picks, getting Miles McBride, Quentin Grimes, Jericho Sims, and a few other players into the Knicks locker room. Had a good summer league, and it looks like some nice young players are coming up. I just want to know your expectations heading into the season for the Knicks.
Well, a lot of excitement with both the Knicks and the Rangers. As far as the Knicks go, last year was an incredible season, winning 41 games, making it to the postseason, finishing fourth in the conference. Tom Thibodeau winning Coach of the Year, Julius Randle winning Most Improved Player. So, again, moving forward with the draft picks you mentioned and Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, the Knicks will certainly look to build on that. On the Rangers side, It's been a build since the 2018 letter that went out to the fans, and had great success in the two lotteries, getting the second and first overall pick, and then signing Artemi Panarin and trading for Adam Fox, who won the Norris Trophy. And now some moves they made this offseason with Ryan Reeves and Sammy Blay and Barkley Goodrow. So a lot of good things happening with both teams at MSG. And the seasons are just around the corner. It's hard to believe because last season went so long. The Knicks played into early June, I guess, late May, early June. And the NHL season did not end until early July. So here we are in early September, and the seasons are just around the corner.
So we had kind of like a boring question here, but I'm going to kind of spin it up and mix it up here. So you're talking about Rangers, Knicks. So at MSG, which do you feel like you have more enjoyment calling, the Rangers or the Knicks? Like, what's the atmosphere difference?
Oh, I love them both. I've been involved with the Rangers for a lot longer now, 26 seasons, and have worked Knick games, about a quarter of the games now for 10 or 11 years. So, you know, for me as a broadcaster, it's two totally different experiences because we call the Ranger games from the Chase Bridge high above the Garden. We could almost touch the ceiling. And during normal years, pre-COVID, we call the Knick games from the floor where you're right in the middle of the action and the fans are surrounding you. So much different experiences calling those games, but obviously have a lot of fun and so much excitement every time I step into the building.
I want to ask about preparation for these games because you're looking at all four sports in completely different ways. The rosters are set. You have the MLB. There's going to be nine players. There's going to be a pitcher. There's going to be people in the bullpen, people on the bench. Maybe they come in to pitch, hit, pinch, run. You have NHL, four different lines of five guys. You got a goalie on each side, maybe some backups play as well if people get injured. The NBA, you're looking at 15 people on a roster. And the NFL, the 53-man. So how many talking points would you say you have on each player for like different sports, and how does the preparation work?
That's a good question, Josh. My preparation is similar for all the sports. The football is the one that consumes the most hours during the week because I might have two teams that I haven't seen all season. If I'm doing a Knicks or a Rangers game, I'm so familiar with those teams. You have to study the opponent. When I do a national hockey game, there's obviously more time that goes into it because it's two teams that I might not have seen in a while. I have a checklist for all sports leading up to my broadcasts. And I usually start about with football. You start on Monday for a Sunday game. For a basketball or hockey game, it's 4 or 5 days before. And my checklist includes preparing my own charts and statistics, reading just about every article that's written on both teams over the span of 4, 5, 6 days prior to the game, watching previous games in football. I always watch the previous game that both teams played. There's a lot of reading involved. I probably read the equivalent of 10 to 15 books every week, but it's newspapers, it's weekly publications, it's articles on the internet, articles that are sent to us by the teams, by Fox, by the various other networks. So I'll go down my checklist. And again, like I said, it's watching prior games, a lot of reading, preparing charts, watching press conferences. Pre-COVID, it was going to practices and press conferences during the last year and a half. A lot of that's been on Zoom. So pretty similar. For a football game, it's probably 30 to 40 hours of preparation starting on Monday, all week long, Monday through Thursday at home or wherever I might be. And then Friday, we'll go in and go to the home team practice and then meet with some players and coaches. We'll do the same thing Saturday when the visiting team gets into town. So football is the one that's the most time-consuming as far as the preparation. But I look at it as fun work. I never feel like I'm going to work. There's a lot of travel and a lot of work and prep involved. But to me, it's a lot of fun studying teams and players and coaches and sports and preparing for a telecast.
So what's it been like with COVID, you know, either the fans not being there, or you're unable to be there and, you know, calling the game from a different location? Like what's that like and how difficult was it to adjust?
Well, Alex, it's been a lot different. When I came home on March 12th, 2020 from a Rangers game in Colorado, I was then home for 146 straight days. Like most of us, you guys and the listeners and viewers, I'm sure had similar experiences. And then I went to the NHL bubble in Edmonton. which was a lot of fun, actually. We were tested every day inside the bubble, inside the fencing, which surrounded the hotels and the arena, so everybody felt safe and had the opportunity to call two and sometimes three NHL games per day in empty arenas. So that was a lot different. With no fans in the building, I had to remind myself to keep up the energy and the enthusiasm. Then when the NFL season began last year, right around a year ago, no fans in a lot of the stadiums, maybe 5,000, 10,000 in some of the stadiums. So again, we all had to remind ourselves to keep the energy and the enthusiasm level up. And then when basketball and hockey started in late December, early January, same thing. We called games at an empty Madison Square Garden for a couple of months, Rangers and Knicks. And then the fans started to come back in. They had a couple of thousand and then a bigger number in the playoffs for the Knicks. So also called many, many games off TV monitors. We did not travel last season with the Knicks and Rangers, so we called the away games off monitors. I just worked the Olympics up in Stamford, Connecticut. I was not in Tokyo. I called some volleyball and baseball games off monitors in a little booth. So it went better than I expected. I felt like during hockey season, I could see about 85% of what I normally would if I were at the game. I might miss a penalty being called away from the play, or you might not see when the goalie's pulled. You might not see what's going on around the bench area. But for the most part, it brought me back to my childhood, actually, when I called games off the television into a tape recorder.
I want to ask you about, obviously, you're calling professional sports, and you called professional sports for a long time. So these players, you know they're going to do some things that are kind of out of this world. But have there been experiences when calling games that you're like, how is this person like doing this on the field? Like, is there any players that come to mind when you think about that?
There are probably times when you do think that. You know, I've witnessed some pretty incredible performances. I was there in a behind-the-scenes role watching the Dream Team play in Barcelona in 1992. I was at Ron Guidry's 18-strikeout game as a youngster, as a fan. I've seen players score five goals in one game. Mika Zibanejad did it last year for the Rangers. I worked a game when Drew Brees and Eli Manning combined to throw 13 touchdown passes. So, yeah, I've been fortunate to witness some incredible performances. And that's the beauty of sports. It's the best reality show because you never know what's going to happen out on the ice, the court, or the field.
So you've stated numerous times that baseball is the hardest sport to call. Why is that? And you know, what's in like what order would you have them, and what's the easiest sport to call? Not that any of them are easy.
I think baseball is the most challenging from a play-by-play standpoint, only because you have so much downtime. The ball's only in action for 10 to 12 minutes, so it's not necessarily the hardest as far as describing the play and what's going on, but there is all that downtime. To me, hockey's the easiest. Some people that hear that think I'm crazy. A lot of people would think hockey's the hardest with the constant line changes, changing on the fly, all of the European names. But to me, it's like riding a bike. I've done it for so long. Basketball is similar to hockey, a little slower, more stoppages, but kind of similar as far as the players moving left to right, right to left, attempting to score, although there's a lot more scoring in basketball than in hockey. Football is the most rhythmic. It's one play, and then it's 20 or 30 seconds, and then it's another play, and then it's 20 or 30 seconds. I had to learn a new sport in volleyball for the Olympics, so that's always a great challenge. I love the variety, so it was a lot of fun. But to me, like I said, just because of all the downtime, baseball is probably the most challenging.
I think Alex just wanted to get that out there because he always likes to laugh about baseball. He thinks it's boring. I very much enjoy it. I'm a big Yankee fan, but I think he just wanted to get that out there so he could see if you can say baseball is boring, which I thank you for not saying that. I never used
the word boring.
No, do not, please, because he was just trying to prove a point to me. That's really why I asked the question.
I wonder what Alex would have thought about a 20-inning game I worked about 10 or 11 years ago, Mets and Cardinals, went about just under 7 hours. No score, Alex, through the first 18 innings in that game.
That's my nightmare.
I think any baseball game is your nightmare, Alex. Let's just say that. We thank you so much for your time with us. We really appreciate it. Obviously, you can go see Kenny Albert on basically when you're watching any sporting event, but specifically, you will see him this season, like he mentioned, like I mentioned, the lead play-by-play voice on Turner Sports. He's on the Knicks broadcast with MSG, the Rangers, MLB on Fox, NFL on Fox. And we are really excited to call games for this upcoming NFL season specifically, because obviously it is what this podcast is about. And do you have a Giants game, do you know, in your schedule?
I have the Giants week 3 and week 4. We have our first 4 weeks. So I'm in Indianapolis for the Seahawks the first week. The Rams back at Indy the second week. So 2 straight weeks in Indianapolis. Atlanta at the Giants, and then the Giants and the Saints week 4.
We're going to be at that Atlanta game. So really excited that you're
going to be able to call that. That'll be a big one. They're retiring Eli's number that day.
Yeah.
We got those tickets before it happened, too, so we were really excited about that. But, yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Kenny Albert, once again, thank you so much.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate you having me on.
Welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast.
I'm Bill.
And I'm Jason. And this is the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. So whether you're a brain, a jock, a valley girl, or a Jedi, we've got some 80s classics for you.
Do these movies stand the test of time? Are we discovering something new? Is there an 80s movie we're finally watching for the first time?
Join us each week as we dive into the cinematic nostalgia that inspired and influenced a generation. From the hits to the cult classics, we'll discuss our earliest memories, favorite scenes, fun facts, and our not-so-favorite movie moments, too.
It's the All 80s Movies Podcast, now available on all major streaming platforms. Please subscribe and happy listening.